You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Can only come from you. Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
Listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. It is Wednesday, hump day, so I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, need to do, should do, must do, will do, and can do. And I hope that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, I know you'll get it done anyway, because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. And we appreciate you for that. With that kind of mindset of no matter what the challenge is, we will get it done. Ashe. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to the archives. You go to timeforanawakening.com and to the far right, other programming, and you click on that. And the first one up is African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be previously recorded programs that are dated and titled. And thanks to my good brother and friend, Brother Kwaku. Brother Kwaku came by the house yesterday looking all dapper, man. I was like, right on, man. Yeah. He had gone to a retirement party for one of the family members here in Atlanta. There's other programming here on Time for an Awakening Media. And aside from my program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Mondays and Wednesdays. So today, as well, it was Monday, is the Black People Matrix. The Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones from 1 to 3 on Mondays and Wednesdays. Also on Monday, Acres of Diamonds public affairs programming out of Philadelphia from 6 to 8. And then from 8 to 9, Let's Buy Black 365. Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then after that program, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10 on Mondays. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. From 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. From 8 to 10 on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC. Revive. And that is from 8 to 10 on Wednesdays. I'm going to get information on Warren Ballantyne. Warren Ballantyne was syndicated for a while. Then some things happened to the brother, and he lost syndication. But he was syndicated. I used to listen to him in Milwaukee every now and then in Milwaukee on the radio station that that they closed down. So I'll get information from Brother Elliot on Warren Ballantyne's program here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. on Thursdays. And then on Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., It Ain't Me. It's Sister POC and her program Revive, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., once again, it is time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call to listen and, more importantly, to communicate and give your African perspectives is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Excuse me. Other announcements, as usual. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. And if you are in the Atlanta area, there is the mall, the Greenbrier Mall. They have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall. The We Buy Black has a kiosk where you can pick up your laundry detergent and toothpaste, toothbrushes, and batteries, and razors, and all kinds of good stuff. Deodorants. Yeah. All products produced by us. WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bomani Tayemba. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. He has taken our brothers and sisters back in May to Ghana, May 22nd to June 4th. That trip you can see on Facebook. Pictures from that trip you can see on Facebook. Facebook.com/Bomani, B-O-M-A-N-I. And if you want to see videos, YouTube.com/Bomani, 2007. And previous tours, he's been doing it for quite a few years. He has a trip upcoming in November 22nd to December 2nd, to South Africa and Johannesburg. Then at the end of December, December 24th to January 4th, 2020, he's going back to Ghana. And you can participate in that too. I announced some prices. But go to the website and check it out for yourself. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Also, too, you can call Brother Bomani at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. Shrine of the Black Madonna, located here in the West End, here in Atlanta, on Ralph David Abernathy, the West End area. The Shrine of the Black Madonna, located here, and the hours of operation are Wednesday through Saturday, 12 to 7, and Sunday from 1 to 3. And they have whatever you need. They have furniture. They have clothing. They have artwork, artifacts. They have the red, black, and green shoes, the Nazgas shoes. They have books. And if you're looking for a book and they don't have it, they'll get it, whatever it is that you need. They also have an African Holocaust Museum. They also have a class every Saturday, Know Thyself, every Saturday, and it's free and open to the public at 1:30 to 3:30, from 1:30 to 3:30. And if you can't attend but you like information, you can contact the Shrine because they have a multimedia library. Yes, brothers and sisters, that multimedia library is extensive. Over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, over 2,000 books. Brothers and sisters, it is 4.5 terabytes of African enlightenment. And it could be at your disposal at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. At the Greenbrier Mall also is the Medu Bookstore. Medu means writings. There's another word that goes after Medu, and that is Netcher, which means gods. That's what the writings were called. They were not called hieroglyphs. The Greeks called it hieroglyphs. It was called the Medu Netcher, the writings of the gods. And the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sunday from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. And, brothers and sisters, you can give them a call at 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. And whatever book that you're looking for, whatever you're looking for, you can get it. And when you go there, you'll be right across from the kiosk of We Buy Black. That's right. Another bookstore that I promote here is in Lithonia
which is east of Atlanta, Lithonia, which is Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, Kazimde Ajamu. And check out the Black Dot. They have books and other stuff. And, of course, they have the red, black, and green shoes as well. And if they don't have what you're looking for, believe me, Brother Ajamu will get it for you. And the number to call is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. 8107. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Us Lifting Us. ULU, the ULU Thursday night broadcast tomorrow night at 9 p.m. You can check it out at 9 p.m. from 9 to 10. Then the number to call is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. The Thursday night broadcast for Us Lifting Us. We pulled our money together because that's what it is. It's a co-op. And we created Cafe ULU. Cafe ULU located in Atlanta, 2036 Sylvan Road in Atlanta. Open Tuesday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday and Sunday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Us Lifting Us. And we have coffee. That's right. We have Cameroon, Tanzanian, Kenya, Ethiopian, where coffee was born. We have other coffee flavors from around the African world and around the world. Come check us out. We have loose teas, and everything at Cafe ULU is produced by us, because that's what it's about, us lifting us. Another product we promote too out of Cafe ULU is Brother Novak Young's delicious vitality drink, Ambrosia. Ambrosia is made from alkaline water, ginger, turmeric, organic cane sugar, and chlorophyll, as well as hibiscus, as well as cinnamon, aloe vera, cayenne, and spirulina. Akabin Institute. Akabin Institute, Baba Mwalimu Baruti and his beautiful wife, Ya Baruti, have been educating young warriors for years, and they need our support. They need our support. You can write a check out to Akabin Institute. Send it to P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30310. Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30310. Or you can go Cash App or PayPal. And you can, with the dollar sign, YAA, M. Baruti, BARUTI. Okay. And they need support. Akabin Institute. Sister Gabby in Haiti has a beautiful program in the northeastern part of Haiti, in the rural area, working with our young people. They have an educational program. They have a co-op program and some chickens. I mean, this, when you go online and see what this sister is doing, she deserves, Sister Gabrielle Ariel. Sister Gabby, she deserves to be supported. Go online to S-O-N-J-E, Sanjay, dash, Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org. S-O-N-J-E, dash, A-Y-I-T-I.org. Sanjay, Haiti.org. Black Talk Radio, the number one radio podcast. Black podcast in the country. We want to keep it that way. It needs to be supported. He has a Project 2019 Media Fund that needs to be supported. Brothers and sisters, we need information. We need to be on the air. So help Brother Scotty Reed meet his goal for the Black Talk Radio Project 2019 Media Fund. Go to BTRN.com. That is BTRN, BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. And, you know, it's on the face there, but even on the front of the webpage, to the right as you scroll down, there's the place where you can donate to the Black Talk Radio Media Fund. And I hope that you will do so. Inye Sesem, the Inye Sesem of Revolutionary Daily Thought. Inye Sesim. July 16th. Nothing pains some people more than having to think. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We can never overemphasize the importance of tradition. Our traditions are all that have come to work for us. They reflect our human essence, our interpretation of the universe, and the most apparent manifestation of our aesthetic and cultural imperatives. Being traditional does not mean being archaic, outdated, outmoded, primitive, backwards, useless or out of sync with reality. For tradition is more or less than all of the intellectual, mechanical, metaphysical technology which naturally maintains a people as they have come to see themselves in this universe. It is the result of untold generations consciously working together to correct their errors and to perfect those corrections. Tradition is the culmination of all that has been tried and proven true through the experience of a people. It defines that people's worth and existence. For these reasons and more, we must get over the idea that our traditions in and of themselves, but especially relative to the Europeans, the Arabs, and the Asians are bad, dysfunctional, useless, or liabilities. We must stop allowing others to convince us that most traditions do not make sense, and they do not have to make sense, and therefore can be discarded at will because they served people way back then, when conditions, knowledge, and expectations are said to have been based on unfounded superstitions, bogus mythology, and the absence of rational scientific thinking. We should know better than to continue to believe the truth of liars. Affirm, I am traditional in every African way. Affirm, I am traditional in every African way. July 17th. The willingness to change strategy is a fundamental requirement of an intelligent community engaged in a protracted struggle against an enemy. Professor Manu Apem. Revolution has never been an option for Negroes. A non-confrontational compliance toward their oppressors is their innately fundamental political philosophy. I repeat, a non-confrontational compliance toward their oppressors is their innately fundamental political philosophy. They can only act against their own. Sure, they would love to talk with you about the black problem under the pretense of group solidarity, but it's only to distract you from your purpose with protracted, meaningless, barren debate, thereby earning themselves invaluable brownie points from their sworn masters. To blindly embrace a self-defeating philosophy because it is human or brings us together is ludicrous if we wish to independently empower an African nation. You do not embrace those who will take you straight to hell, no matter how much blood you shared with them. Some will never listen. Everyone is not able to see. And there are casualties in every war. The conversion of Negroes is not a goal or an option for African warrior scholars. Some Africans have their vested interest in not being African. The idea that finding differences amongst African further divides and weakens us does not take into account the fact that there are people within our group who must be routed out in order for us to make African progress. I repeat, the idea that finding differences among Africans further divides and weakens us does not take into account the fact that there are those people within our group who must be routed out in order for us to make African progress. You cut the bad, infectious animal from the herd. You don't keep it there just for the numbers. Progress cannot occur through embracing enemies within. Affirm, I do not embrace those who would take me straight to hell. affirm, I do not embrace those who would take me straight to their hell. The Inye Sesem, Daily Revolutionary Thought. Brothers and sisters, I hope you're doing well. I hope everything is cool with you. I'm cool. I was hoping to have Brother Conrad Wuerl as my guest to talk about the National Black United Front, the NCOBRA conference, which he attended, reparations, and the idea that many of the so-called millennials are not embracing the idea that we are African. Some of them don't want to be African. I think the European has done and has continued to do a masterful job of manipulation. Brother Franklin Jones, if you listen to his program, he'll tell you about how the mind control that Europeans have utilized to basically negate African free thinking and African liberation thinking, and how we work against ourselves. And it's very plain to see. It's very plain to see on the continent, throughout the diaspora. One of the things that has always bothered me is the fact that we sit on a continent. If you believe in the theory of Pangaea, Pangaea was when all the continents were one big, huge landmass. And then they started to drift apart thousands of years ago, hundred million years ago. So we're talking about at a time when they were together, like maybe 300 million years ago, and maybe 200 million years ago, it started to split and then so forth, and then what you see today. That's why it's interesting that you don't find a lot of dinosaur bones in Africa, but you find them. In fact, some of the bigger dinosaur bones you have found has been here in North America. They found total bones of a T-Rex, you know. So then we got a caller. I'll take a call. Well, I thought I had a caller. Hope you continue to listen and call in when you can, brother or sister. We need that. We appreciate it. But a lot of those bones are found in North America. But what is found in Africa? Africa was the center of that huge one landmass on this planet in the planet's early development. And maybe that's why Africa has the resources, as Dr. John Henry Clark says, and as I say at the end of each program, has all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. And that's what's been happening. So that's why today we're going to talk about how Europe underdeveloped Africa. We're going to pay tribute to Dr. Walter Rodney. We're going to pay tribute to Dr. Walter Rodney, the Senegalese brother who was assassinated by a car bomb, and the philosophy and what he put forth. I mean, brothers and sisters, what's interesting to me is that brothers and sisters from, decades ago, particularly in the 50s into the 60s when that awakening started happening, were very revolutionary in their thinking, very African-centered in their thinking, very clearly understanding and they clearly understood who the enemy is. Today, because how entrenched the European is, we don't look at them as an enemy. We look at them as a benefactor. We look at them as the model We look at them for sometimes, unfortunately, for our very survival, our very existence. We got that call. Caller 919. Good morning. Okay, if you just want to listen, that's cool too. You can do that. I'm going to put you on hold there. So I appreciate you. Stay with us. If you want to speak, say something, just call back and we'll recognize you and get you on so you can give your African perspective. We appreciate it. But Walter Rodney, who was born March 23rd, 1942, and he died June 13th, 1980, was a prominent historian, Guyanese historian, and political activist. He was assassinated in 1980. Born in a working class family in Georgetown in Guyana, it's formerly a colony of Britain, like damn near everywhere else, and still today is part of the so-called Commonwealth, is how Britain has maintained its hold on many of the places that it took, and some of the places that it took because of the weak leadership, they maintain those places today. And that's why Britain is wealthy. That's why Britain is wealthy. The Queen is wealthy. That's why Britain has the influence that it has. I can't stand the British. I was on an airplane coming back from Milwaukee. And I was sitting next to a British individual and his son, you know. And I was just thinking, because I mean, I didn't want to engage in conversation because really just like I sat next to that Caucasian from South Africa who was a safari guide. He was in the U.S. to promote South African safaris, you know. And I don't know, you know, it's just like I have such disdain for the Caucasian collective for what they have done. I can deal with Caucasian individuals, you know, and some Caucasian individuals are cool. Like I said, I worked for over 30-some years in the fire department. Some of the individuals were cool. But as a whole, no. I coached football for over 30 years with a Caucasian gentleman, and we worked well together. You know, the whole idea was to help our community, give the young people that we work with a good experience. And I know we did that. I know we did that, you know. And so, but I mean, and even he was like a conservative. I wouldn't be surprised if he voted for Trump. And boy, is he going through it. I was going to talk about that. I might, because usually I don't talk about the partisan politics of this country and the globe. What I want to talk about is independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. To me, that's the discussion we have here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on African Perspectives, you know. And we don't want to engage in BS debate with Negroes, because I don't want to hear that. That's ludicrous. Only thing I want to discuss is how can, if you got an opinion, it may be adverse, but how do we come together? How do we make liberation and self-determination and sovereignty a reality and starting to move towards that here in my lifetime? I know I won't see, you know, the grandeur of that possibility where Africa is run by Africans and Africans' resources are controlled by Africans, because it gets worse as the days go by, as the weeks go by, as the months go by, as the years go by, as the decades go by. It gets worse. I said to you how I felt going to Ghana this time and seeing the fact that not much progress has been done. Going to Garvey Town after it's been in existence, although I must say, I hope to see a lot of progress because Brother Bomani Tahimba is intricately involved, and I will help him, and I will support that. I like the idea, and I think it should be duplicated. In fact, there's another idea that I'll be talking about next week, Wednesday, and giving some information on Friday's program, the African Conscious Caravan in Los Angeles that will be going around to the various groups and promoting those groups on Marcus Garvey's birthday, August 17th. So Brother Jabari Jamani will be my guest next week, Wednesday, from L.A. Got to get up in early. Like I said, L.A. is from 8 to 10. But he'll be my guest next week, and we'll talk about that. Those are the kind of initiatives that speak to the things that I encourage, You know, those are the kind of initiatives. Born in a working-class family in Jonestown in the British, Walter Rodney was a bright student attending Queens College, where he became a champion debater and athlete, and then attending university on a scholarship at the University of College of the West Indies in Jamaica, graduating in 1963 with a first-class degree in history, thereby winning the Faculty Arts Prize. Brother earned his Ph.D. in African History in 1966 at the School of the Orient and African Studies in London at the age of 24. His dissertation, which focused on the captive trade on the Upper Guinea Coast, was published by Oxford University Press in 1970 under the title A History of Upper Guinea Coast, 1545 to 1800, and was widely acclaimed for its originality in challenging the conventional wisdom on the topic. Dr. Walter Rodney traveled widely and became very well known internationally as an activist, scholar, and formidable orator. He taught at the University of Dar es Salaam in Tanzania, during the periods of 66 to 67, and then from 69 to 74. And in 68, at his alma mater, the University of the West Indies, he was sharply critical of the middle class for its role in the post-independence of the Caribbean. He was also a strong critic of capitalism and argued for a socialist development template. On October 15th, 1968, the government of Jamaica, led by Prime Minister Hugh Speer, declared Rodney persona non grata. The decision to ban him from ever returning to Jamaica and his subsequent dismissal by the university caused many protests by students and the poor of the West Kingston area, was escalated into a riot known as Rodney's Riot, resulting in death. Six people died and causing millions of dollars in damage. The riots, which started on October 16th, triggered an increase in political awareness across the Caribbean, especially among the Afrocentric Rastafarian sect of Jamaica, documented in Rodney's book, The Grounding with My Brothers, published in 1969. In 69, Rodney returned to the University of Dar es Salaam, where he served as a professor of history until 74. Rodney became a prominent Pan-Africanist and was important in the African power movement in the Caribbean and North America. While living in Dar es Salaam, he was influential in developing a new center of African learning and discussion. In 74, he returned to Guyana from Tanzania. He was due to take up a position as a professor at the University of Guyana, but the Guyanese government prevented his appointment. Increasingly active in politics, he founded the Working People's Alliance, a party that provided the most effective and credible opposition to the PNC government. In 1979, he was arrested and charged with arson after two government officials were burned. Assassinated on June 13, 1980. He was killed in Georgetown at the age of 38 by a car bomb a month after returning from celebrating during the independence of Zimbabwe. I remember when Zimbabwe gained its independence. I was at the fire station and this one lieutenant talking with him. He was big into the service, big into the army. And he was adamant. He hated the fact that the Europeans, the Caucasians, had to give up Zimbabwe. That Ian Smith, Rhodesia, named after Cecil Rhodes, they had to give it up. And he wasn't happy with that. And talking with him, I just some things you kind of remember, you know, for whatever reason. But I said to him, you just believe that white folks are supposed to rule? Well, we're better effective in that. Some stuff he said. In time of tense political activism, he was survived by his wife, Patricia, and three children. His brother, Donald Rodney, who was injured in the explosion also, said that a sergeant in the Guyana Defense Force named George Smith had given Rodney the bomb that killed him. After the killing, Smith fled to French Guyana, where he died in 2002. It is widely believed, but not proven, that the assassination was a setup by the Guyanese president, Lyndon Forbes Burnham. Rodney believed that the various ethnic groups that had been historically disenfranchised by the ruling colonial class should work together, which was in conflict with Burnham. In the early 2015, a commission of inquiry was held during which a new witness said that Rodney had done this to himself. So I ain't going to get off into that. Rodney's most influential book was How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, published in 1972. In it, he describes how Africa had been exploited by European imperialists, leading directly to the modern underdevelopment of most of the continent. The book became enormously influential as well as controversial. It was groundbreaking in that it was among the first to bring a new perspective to the question of underdevelopment in Africa. Rodney's analysis went far beyond the previously accepted approach in the study of third world underdevelopment. Instead of being interested primarily in interrelations of African trade and politics, as many of us were at the time, Walter Rodney focused his attention on the agricultural base of African communities, on the productive forces within them, and on the process of social differentiation. As a result, his research raised a whole set of fresh questions concerning the nature of African social institutions on the Upper Guinea Coast in the 16th century, and on the impact of the Atlantic trade. In doing so, he helped to open up a new dimension. Almost immediately, he stimulated much further writings and research on West Africa, and he initiated a debate which still comes and still continues and now extends across the whole range of African history. When teaching at the University of Dar es Salaam and in the West Indies, he launched and sustained a large number of discussion groups which swept up and embraced many of who had little or no formal education. As a writer, he reached out to contact thousands in the grounding with my brother and his influential How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, 1972, remarks by Professor John Richard Gray, History Today. When we think of Walter Rodney as a revolutionary scholar, we're also talking about two things, radical scholarship and a radical scholar, and his revolutionary contribution to the study of history of Africa. Walter Rodney was a pioneering scholar who provided new answers to old questions and posed new questions related to the study of Africa. Walter Rodney was not a captive intellectual playing to the gallery of local or international radicalism. He was clearly one of the most solidly ideological situated intellectuals ever to look at colonialism and its contemporary air black opportunism and exploited in. And these are some sayings by different people. In a new foreword to Rodney's book, academic and political activist Angela Davis remarks, to mark time, he insisted, or even to move slowly while others leaped ahead, is virtually equivalent to going backward. and How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, Walter Rodney painstakingly argued that imperialism and the various processes that bolstered colonialism created impenetrable structural barricades to economic and thus also political and social progress on the continent. At the same time, his argument is not meant to absolve Africans of the ultimate responsibility for development. Davis also draws attention to that Rodney did not ignore gender issues. On the contrary, he addressed the role of gender. He pointed out that under colonialism, African women's social, religious, and constitutional and political privileges and rights disappeared while the economic exploitation continued and were often intensified. Rodney's community-grounded approach to mass education during the 1960s and his detailed descriptions of his pedagogy approach to grounding documented his role as an important, critical, and contemporary figure. Walter Rodney. I have some of the quotes from revolutionary thinker, activist, and historian Walter Rodney, 1974, How Europe Underdeveloped Africa. You know, like I said, you know, having gone to Ghana, and Ghana was the first. But what we fail to understand within our quest for independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty, because of how the European operates and how he manipulates, we have a host of agent provocateurs, sellouts, self-hating and denigrating individuals who will do whatever they can. Just like, you know, of course, here in America, the idea you are free to do what you want to do, support who you want to support. You know, you have that right. But when you see individuals supporting things that you know have been and will continue to be detrimental to us, it's very difficult. We should not be democratic or republic in this country. We should get out of both parties and form our own political party. And whenever there's a candidate in either party that supports what we are presenting, if that individual supports what we collectively are presenting, then we will support that candidate regardless of whatever political party that they're coming from. Because ours should be we shouldn't be, not, as I stated many times, Democratic or Republican, we should be progressive. And that's what those four women are about. They are the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, why they're catching so much flack. Just like Ocasio-Cortez said, when she says, somebody says, learn about the, why should I learn about a failed, a broken system? We're here to reform. We're not here to just go along to get along and just be happy that we're here. They were elected by their different groups and communities and districts to go to Washington to help make a change. The sister who deals with the Michigan area, the Detroit area, in that area, who was elected from Michigan. The sister, Ilhan Omar from Minnesota, came to the U.S. from Somalia, has a young child, and became a citizen. Ocasio-Cortez in New York, and Sister Presley from the University, excuse me, Presley from Michigan, Massachusetts. I'm not sure if she's from the Boston area or whatever, but she is in Massachusetts. And so these four women who they've called the, what do they call themselves, or somebody called them? I can't remember. It'll come to me, but these four women, of course, because of the statements that Trump has made, tell them to go back where they came from. And it's constantly pointed out that Caucasians never tell other Caucasians to go back where they came from. Maybe they said that way back when Irish were coming in and they weren't, you know, or Italians were coming in or whoever else. But in today's world, and it has been that way all the way, I would say the 20th and the 21st century, you didn't tell Caucasians to go back where they came from. You might have said that to Asians. You might have said that to Indians, not indigenous Indians, but Indians from India. You might have said that truly from Africans. You know, they always say that by Africa, go back where you came from. You know, because what it means, just like when Nancy Pelosi, who I can't stand, but when she said to me, based upon what he's saying, Trump, that when he says make America great again, he's saying make America white again. And of course he is. When he was saying it, if you followed, I don't follow this stuff very closely, not real close, but it's right there. Hell, I watch news. I watch information. And clearly Donald Trump in his campaigns, and then later in when he holds these rallies, and now he's got to intensify those rallies to prepare himself for the 2020 election. And so he had Hillary to vilify. So now he's going to have these four women to vilify, to spew out all that vitriol, you know? And so he'll make them and say that's the Democratic Party. And so if you want to vote for stability, you want to vote for progress, then you want to vote Republican. You want to maintain a status quo. Look how good the economy is. Brothers and sisters, this economy is not that good. It is a facade. Particularly for those who are struggling. When they said, and some Negro had the gall to repeat it, that this economy is doing well, American Africans are doing well in it. Oh, I wholeheartedly beg to differ. And of course, Trump said the same thing. When you have black unemployment, you know, at such a, in fact, you haven't seen this black unemployment like this since you were enslaved. There you had full employment, 100%. Here, I don't know what the percentage is, and I don't give a damn. I don't care. All I know is the stratification and divisions in this country are deep. And so therefore, American African people in it will never reach any kind of true equality. In fact, I don't want to be equal to murderers and rapists and killers and supplanters. I don't want to be equal to that, to be equal. I just want them to get out of our lives, the lives of our people. I've got some information I'm going to be reading from that 20 quotes or many quotes by Brother Dr. Walter Rodney when we come back. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back from that break, brothers and sisters, we'll get back off into this. And you can join us. Please do so. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. 1-800-332-2832, and you can join the conversation. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Also, other programming here on Time for an Awakening Media. Right after this program today and on Monday is the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones from 1 to 3. And then on Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds. Following Acres of Diamonds on Monday is Let's Buy Black 365. Following Let's Buy Black 365 on Mondays is Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. I'm not sure when the Warren Ballantyne Show airs. I'll get that information for you. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. On Fridays, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 8 p.m. on Fridays. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. On Saturday. And then on Sunday, Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 7 p.m. on Sunday. And of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Getting back to the discussion on about the life of in a tribute to Dr. Walter Rodney. And the reason why I, instead of talking about, oh, no, that's not Brother Larry Graham. I know it sounds like Brother Larry Graham, and I'm going to thank Brother Kwaku for hipping me because that was, they call themselves the squad. I don't know who called them that. The four of them, they're the squad. The squad. But, no, that's Herbie Hancock. Traitor, Herbie Hancock. I know that's a jam, ain't it? You like that one. I know how you are, brother. Appreciate you, Kwaku. Pervasive and vicious racism was present in imperialism as a vibrant independence of the economic rationality that initially gave birth to racism. It was economics that determined that Europe should invest in Africa and control the continent's raw materials and labor. It was racism which confirmed the decision that formed of the control should be to direct colonial rule. Racism. I think a lot of times, just like what you have been witnessing these past few days, and particularly from past weekend, people don't understand what racism is. And I've had at least two programs, particularly while I've been on Time for an Awakening, and maybe I just ought to do another one or replay the previous ones, because our problem is that we don't understand. Just like Neely Fuller said, if you do not understand European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, although Neely Fuller says, if you do not understand white supremacy, how it operates, how it functions, then everything else you think you understand will only confuse you. And I, Brother Oshie, I maintain that we are so confused that we're confused in our confusion, and that's how confused we are. We don't have a damn clue. Racism is at the very root. The idea that Caucasians believe. That's why there's three things that happen with Caucasians. That these three things is the reason why there's nothing we can do or say that can change the mindset of Caucasians and to prevent them from doing what they're doing. The only thing is the separation and ultimately the fight. First, there's cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance means that they have a core belief. Europeans have a core belief that, in this core belief didn't start ancient times. This core belief started when Europeans woke up out of that dark age, that medieval age, when they were land poor, resource poor, and people poor. And they got an idea about who they are collectively through the religion that they developed, the Caucasian whiteness. And they went around the world taking everybody's stuff in the name of. They have a core belief that they are superior. And even though there's a plethora, there's a mountain of evidence to prove otherwise, they dismiss it. They ignore it. It makes them feel uneasy to challenge their core belief. So you can't do it. Cognitive dissonance. They also suffer from what Dr. Robin DiAngelo called white fragility or Caucasian European fragility. They are fragile. When she was doing these workshops after Trayvon Martin and Eric Garner, which of course they let this another police officer who killed one of us, of course they're going to do that. And nobody should be surprised. I feel bad for the family. The mother was on the national news this morning, and been on the national news. I feel bad for the family. I feel bad for Trayvon Martin. I feel bad for Tamir Rice. I feel bad for Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, and all the other countless brothers and sisters from over the decades, from over the centuries, who fall victim to a murderous system. So they suffer from white fragility. They didn't want to hear it. They didn't want to hear the evil that they have done. They didn't want to hear of taking people's land and basically eliminating people to the point of genocide. The only ones that have really happened to have genocide, actual genocide, are Europeans on people of color. The Tasmanians. I don't know if they call them Tasmanian, but they wiped them out. Hell, they had genocide in this hemisphere, the Akwa Indians, and then later bringing in the Africans for what is now called Jamaica and the Dominican Republic, or Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Wiped them out. Genocide. They didn't want to hear that because they want to believe that they are good people. They gave the world Christianity. They gave the world democracy and a financial exploitative system of capitalism. Many Caucasians would want us to believe that we should be thankful to them, and some of the Negroes are, that we have exposed them to Western ideas and Western concepts. Caucasian fragility. They are fragile. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear from Caucasians. So they sure in the hell don't want to hear from us. So those Caucasians like Tim Wise and what's her name, who's been doing those workshops for many years, it'll come to me too. But, you know, they didn't want to hear from them. And you probably, Jane Elliott, you probably seen her do those workshops. I mean, she was on Oprah's show and she was on Phil Donahue's show. She's been doing this. I mean, she's old because she's been doing this since the 60s. The blue-eyed, brown-eyed, you know. I remember seeing Charles King, Reverend Charles King, an imposing man with a deep voice, confronting Caucasians, having them crying because of how they are and how they think. And so you can deal with a few, but we ain't talking about a few. We're talking about a mentality. They also... I said three things. I only gave you two, right? I gave you cognitive dissonance and Caucasian fragility. Well, the third is hegemony, European hegemony. What that means is what's mine is mine and what's yours is mine. And that was the mentality. They're selfish and greedy and they don't want to share. That's why, to me, anybody who thinks that we were freed is in pathological denial of reality and history. That war was not fought for us. That war was fought because of economics. If the war was fought for us, then if they won the war, why weren't we allowed freedom? Why weren't we allowed access? Why were we absorbed into the society? We were treated just as bad in the North as we were in the South. And as more of us went North because of how brutal it was in the South and lack of jobs, then we faced that harsh reality. Walter Rodney. Anyway, underdevelopment is a paradox. Many parts of the world that are naturally rich are actually poor, and parts that are so well off in wealth of soil and subsoil are enjoying the highest standards of living. Let me repeat that. And parts that are not so well off in soil and subsoil are enjoying the highest standards of living. So here you have Africa with all those resources, but yet Europe has none. Europe has none. They take from everybody else. They have the highest standard of living. When capitalists from the developed parts of the world try to explain this paradox, they often make it sound as if there is something God-given about the situation. One bourgeoisie economist in a book on development accepted that the comparative statistics of the world today show a gap that is much larger than it was before. By his own admission, the gap between the developed and the undeveloped countries has increased by at least 15 to 20 times over the last 150 years. However, the bourgeoisie economist in question does not even give a historical explanation, nor does he consider that there is a relationship of exploitation which allowed capitalist parasites to grow fat and impoverish the dependencies. They like to think that this is a God-given, this is something natural. That the smallest population on the planet controls the wealth of the planet. The smallest population. But yet, they control. And how do they control? Oh, yes, we know. And you can listen to Brother Franklin's program from 1 to 3. And he'll give you all the information that you need to know and understand about mind control, about how they manipulate this. But the real bottom line is they have an idea. And of course, they're willing to defend it psychologically and militarily. In fact, what's helped facilitate the Europeans' rise more than anything was not the religion of Christianity that they imposed on others and their forms of government, but the ability to kill you. That's the main thing that helped facilitate Europeans' rise. During the colonial period, the forms of political subordination in Africa was obvious. There were governors, colonial officials, and police. In politically independent African states, the metropolitan capitalists have to ensure favorable political decisions by remote control. So they set up their political puppets in many parts of Africa who shamelessly agree to compromise with the vicious apartheid regime of South Africa when their masters told them to do so. The revolutionary writer Frantz Fanon has dealt in at length with the question of minority in Africa, which serves as the transmission line between the metropolitan capitalists and the dependencies in Africa. The importance of this group cannot be underestimated. The presence of a group of African sellouts is part of the definition of underdevelopment. Any diagnosis of underdevelopment in Africa will reveal not just low capita income and potent deficiencies, but also the gentlemen who dance in Abuja, Accra, and Kinshasa when music is played in Paris, London, and New York. These Negroes dance to that tune. Whatever the European puts out there, they dance to that. Yassa. That's what I see. And I think that sometimes when I look at some of the brothers and sisters who support the Republican Party and probably supported the Republican Party before Trump. But to me, if I did, when Trump got in, the way he has been, I could see supporting the Republican Party of the shysters and the slick cats of the past, the tricky dicks, you know, the Bushes. I could see Ronald Reagan and his cohorts. But Donald Trump is so overtly ignorant, so crass, uncouth, a bully, an embarrassment. I couldn't support that cat for nothing. But yet they still do. They try to rationalize it. Well, it's the party. Yeah, nice party. White racist notions, Caucasian racist notions are so deep-rooted within capitalist society that the failure of African agriculture to advance was put down to the inherent inferiority of Africans. It would be much truer to say that it was due to Caucasian intruders, although the basic explanation is to be found not in personal ill will of the colonists or in their racial origin, but rather in the organized viciousness of the capitalist colonial system. And that's a fact. As part of the hypocrisy of colonialism, it becomes fashionable to speak of how Europe brought Africa into the 21st century. This assertion has complications in social, economic, and political spheres, and it could be shown to be false, not in some but in all aspects. So often it is said that colonialism modernized Africa by introducing the dynamic features of capitalism, such as private property in land, private ownership of the other means of production, and money relationships. Here it is essential to distinguish between capitalist elements and capitalism as a total social system. Colonialism introduced some elements of capitalism into Africa. In general terms, where communalism came into contact with money economy, the latter imposed itself. In general, where communalism, which is an African way, came in contact with the money economy, the latter imposed itself. Cash crop farming and wage labor led away from the extended family as a basis of production and distribution. One South African saying put forward that the white man has no kin. His kin is money. That is a profound revelation of the difference between capitalist and pre-capitalist societies. And when capitalism came into contact with the still largely communal African societies, it introduced money relationships as an expense of kinship ties. That's why on the continent today, just like everywhere else, because the European dollars, petrodollars, and financial system rules the planet, and it's not backed up by anything. The paper money you have in your pocket when you go to the bank to get some more of it is not backed up by anything. It's not supported by anything but the ability to kill your ass. That's what it's backed up. The military might. However, colonialism did not transform Africa into a capitalist society comparable to the metropoles, the Europeans. Had it done that, one might have complained of the brutalities and inequalities of capitalism, but it could not have been said that colonialism failed to advance Africa along the path of human historical development. No, and it wasn't going to. It doesn't want competition. It doesn't want to go up against some other kind of system or even capitalism itself against a people who they don't want to be free. It is fairly obvious that capitalists do not set out to create other capitalists who would be rivals. On the contrary, the tendency of capitalism in Europe from the very beginning was one of competition, elimination, and monopoly. Don't you see that today? Monopoly. You know the game. You know the idea and the concept of the game. When does the game end, family? Exactly. When that one person has everything. capitalism. Therefore, when the imperialist stage was reached, the metropolitan capitalists had no intentions of allowing rivals to arise in the dependencies. However, in spite of what the metropoles wanted, some local capitalists did emerge in Asia and Latin America. Africa is a significant exception in the sense that, compared with the others colonized people, far fewer Africans had access to the middle rungs of the bourgeoisie ladder in terms of capital for investment. The interpretation that underdevelopment is somehow ordained by God is emphasized because of the racist trend in European scholarship. It is in line with racist prejudice to say openly or to imply that their countries are more developed because their people are innately superior, and that the responsibilities for economic backwardness of Africa lies in the genetic backwardness of a race of black Africans. An even bigger problem is that the people of Africa and other parts of the colonized world have gone through a cultural and psychological crisis and have accepted, at least partially, the European version of things. That means that the African himself has doubts about his capacity to transform and develop his natural environment. With such doubts, he even challenges those of his brothers and sisters who say that Africa can and will develop through the efforts of its own people. Yes, he does. And because we say that, there are Africans on the continent who have said it and continue to say it, but the status quo is maintained because of those who align themselves with the colonizer. With such doubts, he even challenges those of his brothers who say that Africa can and will develop through the efforts of its own. If we can determine when underdevelopment came about, it will dismiss the lingering suspicion that it is racially or otherwise predetermined and that we can do little about it. It's right there, brothers and sisters. It's in the history. But, you know, a lot of it is a saying that, truth. Truth comes, but we can't hear it. But how can we hear it when we've been programmed to fear it? Truth comes. I come every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And I'm not saying this is my opinion. This is my truth. I ain't saying it's about me. In fact, if it was my opinion, I couldn't do the program because it would be deeply profanity laced. Because sometimes as I read this, if you know me, I'm really boiling inside to go out and say, what I try to do is bring you that truth based upon the scholarly research of our scholars and our historians, such as Dr. Walter Rodney, of how Europe underdeveloped Africa. And yet we love Europeans. We pray. And then something happens to them. We are just like every damn day you will see something about the British, the Queen, the royals, every damn day on the computer and on television, on the national news, for sure. And all of them, the Queen. Every damn day. The question as to who and what is responsible for African underdevelopment can be answered at two levels. First, the answer is that the operation of imperialist system bears major responsibilities for African economic retardation by draining Africa's wealth and by making it impossible to develop more rapidly the resources of the continent. Number two, one has to deal with those who manipulate the system and those who are either agents or unwittingly accomplices of the said system. The capitalists of Western Europe were the ones who actively extend their exploitation from inside Europe to cover the whole of Africa. In recent times, they were joined and to some extent replaced by capitalists from the United States. And for many years now, even the workers of those metropolitan countries have benefited from the exploitation and underdevelopment of Africa. None of these remarks are intended to remove the ultimate responsibility for development from the shoulders of Africa. Let me repeat. None of these remarks are intended to remove the ultimate responsibility for development from the shoulders of Africans. Not only are there African accomplices inside the imperialist system, but every African has a responsibility to understand the system and work for its overthrow. A lot of African accomplices that are involved in the continuation of this system over Africans. You know, and I've seen many Negroes over time. Some I remember, maybe not names, but I remember situations. I never forget the situation before Nelson Mandela was released and, you know, and apartheid, yeah, right, was ended. But there was an African, a Negro, who in suit and tie was an emissary for the South African apartheid government, going to other countries to persuade them to continue because of the, at the time, of course, there was isolation of South Africa, although United States didn't want to do it. Reagan didn't want to do it. He supported the South African government, so-called constructive engagement, but the boycott of South Africa by many, and it led, of course, to Africa being South Africa cutting a deal with Nelson Mandela. The deal is, you don't nationalize nothing. We still control the money, and we gonna control the military. You can be the black face in a high place, and you can make it appear that there's good things happening, but basically the status quo gonna be maintained. You understand? Yes.
That sounds like Negroes in America.
Sure do. How you doing, Jay?
what's going on? I mean, that sounds like the Negroes you got here in America.
Yeah.
I mean, you got one of the most disgustingest representatives in Congress that one could imagine, a weak-kneed, bend-over, shiftless Negro like John Lewis. John Lewis needs to be put to sleep.
I knew you were going to say John
Lewis.
Games
with him.
You know, he still is that so-called quote icon because, you know, he got bopped upside the head.
He got beat upside the head.
Yeah, and Bloody Sunday.
He deserves to get beat upside his head. He deserves to get beat upside his head now because of the ineffective leader that he is and the worthless, spineless leader that he is. I mean, the problem with us as a people is we play too many games with these jokers. We allow these jokers to go into retirement, enjoy the benefits, and leave us in a worse position than when they black behinds first got in.
That's true.
I mean, yep. It's unfortunate, but the truth of the matter is, men like John Lewis hasn't moved us forward as an African people.
No.
You know what I mean? I mean, we just need to be honest about it. You know what I mean? But John Lewis is no stalwart. John Lewis is not no visionary person for the future of African people. He just wants you to be in a better position.
That's right. He wants you to be,
you know what I mean?
Right.
That's,
he just wants you to be more, he just wants you to be more comfortable in Caucasian supremacy. He wants you to find a comfortable corner, a comfortable niche, you know?
And let the Yoruba do whatever
exactly
he wants to. Now, listen, Oshi, I got to say something to you right quick. Stop feeling so bad when that little, you know, C word come out of your mouth. It's a natural feeling. It's what they are. You know what I mean? I understand that Scotty want to be in a situation to maybe get a couple of dollars from them filthy beasts, but it's a feeling that something you just can't suppress. It's not a thing to whereas you're supposed to feel bad when you utter that word, because it's a truthful word. It's the words of what they are.
Well, whatever.
Never deny yourself the beauty of calling a clown what a clown is.
For sure. I hear you, Jay.
Don't do that. Don't do that to yourself, brother.
Well,
you're too good of an African.
Well, let me just say this. I told Scotty that's what I would do. And that's I'm a man of my word, so that's what I'm going to do. And that's why I try my best not to use profanity. I try my best not to do these things. But sometimes, Jay, just like the other day, it came out. Because you're right. Sometimes it cannot be suppressed because you know what it is. And you know what's happening.
Well,
and you know who's doing it. And so you become emotional about it.
It
and you go ahead and say it. Yes.
Because it's a natural thing.
Yeah.
It's the rightful thing.
Yeah.
It's what has to be said. But I just wanted to holler at you right now.
Well, I appreciate Jay. Continue listening. All right, brother. Continue
to
listen.
Talk to you on Friday. Hotep, brother.
Hotep. 602. Good afternoon.
Yes, brother Oshi. Good afternoon.
Hi, brother Marcus. How are you today?
Doing great, good brother.
Good.
You know, another name for them is Scallywag.
Scallywag. There's a whole amount of derogatory names that can be used to describe Europeans. Believe me, and all of them are appropriate at various times. Believe me, I agree.
Exactly. Now, that book there, I read that book there from that brother, How Europe Underdeveloped Africa. And those Europeans are still using that same approach.
Yes.
Because that democracy, you know, in Africa may not be such a good thing, you know, for black people.
No, it's
not. Because what they do in Africa, what the European has done, all the tribes, you know what he do? He fund them political parties. See, so he go find all the tribes and then finance each of them for their political party. So each tribe now have his own political party. See, creating more division in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so maybe this democracy we talking about, you know, everybody, you know, we have to run and use the white man model. Look. We have a different experience and history from him. So we can't use his model to solve our issues. See? So, you know,
Marcus, look at the model, the European model of capitalism and exploitation and manipulation and so forth. There is no way in hell to where these Caucasians are, where Africans can even remotely think that we can be on a par. They have institutional things that they have put in place that are perpetual, that we, in order for us to be who the people we want to be, we must get out of. We can't participate in. We'll never win their game. It is their game. And even if it looks like we might be winning, hell, they automatically change the rules. It is always a benefit for them at the expense of us. And that's how it works. But yet we don't have the leadership and the vision of leadership that calls it out and has us to go into right direction because of fear.
Fear.
And exploitation.
Right, fear. Mm-hmm. Fear of dying. But I tell them, I say, look, you're going to die anyway.
That's right.
You ain't going to get out of this world alive.
That's right. You're going to die anyway. So you might as well fight.
Negro is how you live.
Yep.
That's important. What type of life you going to live, Negro? Are you going to be a flunky junkie for the rest of your life? Are you just going to be hooked on being a flunky? Are you going to stand up and straighten up as a man? You know what I'm saying? Because ain't none of us going to get out of this world alive.
That's
so
right.
You got to face reality. But Brother Oshi, down here, down south, these Negroes here, I don't know what the hell is wrong with them. See, these Negroes are here, brother.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You got to take a drink every now and then because these Negroes here, is... they're down here praising Trump. And I said, damn, these black folks here. And you from downtown, here, you're supposed to be the one who stand up.
Yeah.
Against this system because you have been
you've been dogged out for so long. You've been dogged out for so long. But yet you were supporting somebody who wants to maintain and sustain the privilege that they have at your expense. And you're gonna go along with that. You're gonna go and support that. You fool.
Looking for a white savior, brother.
Yep.
All they doing well, you gotta just go pray about it. Oh, you know, just take it to the Lord in prayer. Let's pray about it. Jesus is gonna save you. I look at the Negro, I just walk away. I ain't even got no time to talk, you know.
Well, see,
anyway, good brother. Keep on keeping on.
I appreciate you, Marcus, and you have a blessed day, man, and hope you get a chance to listen on Friday, man. Have a good day, brother. Peace. And he's right. And he's right. You know, to me, it's, and I know a number of us who blame ourselves because we don't do better. Like that saying goes, if we knew better, we do better. If we knew better, we do better. But the reality is a lot of us don't want to know because by knowing, it automatically puts the pressure on you to do better. So I'd rather continue on in this mental messed up state that I'm in than to have the consciousness for me to struggle to do better, to struggle to embrace my Africanness, to struggle to embrace brothers and sisters who are like-minded and to work with them to pose a new paradigm and a new idea. That's too much work. I'd rather just want to beg Caucasians to find a comfortable corner, a comfortable niche in their world, in European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. Although I will never experience those, but if I can just get a little taste of it, and to hell with everybody else, I got mine. I got mine in this system. Get yours. And if you don't get yours, it's your fault. It's not the system. It's there for everybody. A lot of us believe that. That's a damn shame. A lot of us believe just that. That this all the situation is our fault. You know, let me go back to what Dr. Walter Rodney. It is further to be argued that by the 19th century, Caucasian racism had become so institutionalized in the capitalist world, and notably, definitely in the United States, which is the bastion, the United States of America, is the bastion of European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege because the United States is the military arm of Caucasian supremacy. And so you hailing and loving America, not understanding that America is not the idea that it says it is, the multicultural, multi-ethnic idea that many people, that all of these politicians are talking. No, it's not. It never has been, and it never will be, no matter how hard you want it to be or how hard you beg these crackers to make it. It's not. That it is sometimes ranked above the maximization of profits has a motive for oppressing African people. In the short run, European racism seems to have done Europeans no harm. And they use these erroneous ideas to justify their further domination of non-European people in the colonial epochs. But international proliferation of bigoted and unscientific racist ideas was bound to have its negative consequences in the long run. When Europeans put millions of their own brothers, the European Jews, into ovens under the Nazis, the chickens were coming home to roost. Such behavior inside of the democratic European A democratic Europe was not as strange as it is sometimes made out to be. There was always a contradiction between the elaboration of a democratic ideas inside Europe and the elaboration of authoritarianism and thuggish practices by Europeans with respect to Africans particularly. When the French Revolution was made in the name of liberty, equality, and fraternity, it did not extend to Africans who were enslaved by French and in the West Indies and in the Indian Ocean. Indeed, France fought against the efforts of those people to emancipate themselves, and the leaders of their bourgeoisie revolution said plainly that they did not want to make it on behalf of the African humanity. Fascism is a deformity of capitalism. It heightens the imperialist tendencies toward domination, which is inherent in capitalism, and it safeguards the principle of private property. At the same time, fascism is an immeasurable strengthens the institutional racism ahead breed by capitalism, whether it is against European Jews, as in Hitler's case, or against Africans, has the ideology of Portugal, Salazar, and the ideas of South Africa. Fascism reverses the political gains of the bourgeoisie democratic system, such as free elections, equality for the law, parliaments, and it also exalts authoritarianism and the reactionary union of the church with the state. In Portugal and Spain, it was the Catholic Church. In South Africa, it was the Dutch Reformed Church. Fascism was a monster born of capitalist parents. Fascism comes as the end product of centuries of capitalist bestiality, exploitation, domination, and racism, mainly exercised outside Europe. It is highly significant that many settlers of the colonial officials displayed a leaning toward fascism. South Africa, and apartheid in South Africa, is nothing but fascism. It was gaining roots from the early period of Caucasian colonization in the 17th century, and particularly after the mining industry brought South Africa fully into the capitalist orbit in the 19th century. Another example of fascist potential of colonialism was seen when France was overrun by the Nazis in 1940. The French fascists collaborate with the Nazis to establish what was called the Vichy regime in France, and the French Caucasian settlers in South Africa or in Africa supported the Vichy regime. A more striking incident to the same effect was a fascist ideology developed by Caucasian settlers in Algeria, who not only opposed independence for Algeria under Algerian rule, but they also strove to bring down the more progressive or liberal governments of the metropolitan France. In some districts, capitalism brought about the technological backwardness in agriculture. On the reserves of southern Africa, far too many Africans were crowded into inadequate land and were forced to engage in intense farming using techniques that were suitable only to a serfing cultivation. In practice, that was a form of technological regression because the land yielded less and less and became destroyed in the process. Whenever Africans were hampered in their use of their ancestral lands on a wide-ranging shifting basis, the same negative effect was to be found. And since the, I'm about running out of time, because there's so much more that Brother Walter Rodney had to say about capitalism and colonialism and neocolonialism and all the things that affect African people and that we can still see today the effects of these things. Before I get off the air, as I constantly do, I beg and plead. And I'll continue to beg and plead. Because we as a people, we need to understand what has happened to us. We need to understand what continues to happen to us. We need to understand all those brothers and sisters who have become not brothers and sisters, but agent provocateurs and those who would do the bidding for Europeans. We need to understand that. You know? Yeah. Fascism. Let me find a piece I did on fascism. I don't know if it's in this book. No, it's in this book. Because I want to read this to you on fascism because you got to understand what is fascism And of course, we know we suffer from the Stockholm syndrome. An emotional attachment to a captor formed by a hostage as a result of continuous stress dependent and a need to cooperate for survival. So you identify with your captors. You acquiesce to what they want and what they're doing because of fear and the need for the dependency and the need to cooperate to survive. Instead of fighting and challenging, you just go along to get along. Fascism. Powerful and continuing. Nationalism. Disdain for human rights. Identification of enemies. Scapegoats as a unifying cause. All these things are fascism. And you can see this particularly because of Trump exposed a lot, because of his ignorance and how he, because other politicians were very slick. They felt the same way. They would have wanted to say the same thing, but they didn't. They knew that those kinds of words would be alienating. Those kinds of words, but as you can see, the divide has never been more deep than it is. And honestly, I love it because I'm hoping that we see it and we'll close ranks, we'll come together and we'll do for ourselves. Identification of enemies, scapegoats as a unifying cause, supremacy of the military, rampant sexism, control the mass media, obsession with national security, build that wall. Religion and government are intertwined. Corporate power is protected. Labor power is suppressed. Disdain for intellectuals and the arts. Obsessed with crime and punishment. Rampant cronyism and corrupt, fraudulent elections. What I just read to you is what fascism is. And you tell me if that is not what we are experiencing today, not just in this country, but globally, particularly as it pertains to Europeans and their continuation of their dominance. Powerful and continuing nationalism, disdain for human rights, identification with enemies. Identification of enemies. Scapegoats has a unifying cause. Supremacy of the military. Rampant sexism. Control mass media. Obsession with the national security. Religion and government are intertwined. Corporate power is protected. Labor power is suppressed. Disdain for intellectuals and the arts. Obsessed with crime and punishment. Rampant cronyism and corporate fraudulent elections. It is what it is, brothers and sisters. Fascism and cronyism. Brothers and sisters, you are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. I'm glad that you joined us. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the MIND, but the MINE, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do it out, and they don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, Shem Hotep, go in peace. Asante Sana, thank you. Bibi Fahodia. Bibi Fahodia is our victorious destiny. Have a blessed and wonderful day, family.